etched materially. So this is necessary. This verse is making the point, that verse in Bhagavad Gita is making the point, that one-pointed attention is necessary in order to advance in Krishna consciousness. Any comments or questions? In God we trust. Yes. They got votes. They ran for Congress or whatever in America in a certain area only. It wasn't like a national effort. And they got, I don't know how many, but they got, you know, something like some sort of percentage of a percent of the vote in that area. So some people appreciate it. Prabhupada encouraged it. Yeah, the idea there is, you know, that it's a method of preaching Krishna consciousness. Generally, the thing is that the particular devotee involved was sort of like a little more on the Kshatriya side. Generally, what Srila Prabhupada encouraged was that we could advise the politicians rather than become the politicians. Yes. You know, I don't think that Srila Prabhupada took it that seriously, like we are really going into politics here. I think it was more just, you know, the devotees were enthusiastic. And it was more like that. Well, when Srila Prabhupada seriously talked about politics, it was more in terms of us advising the politicians, because we're meant to be Brahmins. Yeah. Yeah. But we're definitely not going to get involved in voting. You know, should I vote for the ANC or should I vote for whoever else, someone else? Even during the election, actually, a few years ago, a couple of our devotees really living in the temples got quite worked up about we should vote for a certain party, and anyway, this is not really our idea to get involved. If there are people, you know, politicians, people who are of that nature who become devotees, as has happened, we've had the odd politician who has become a devotee, then, you know, we may get behind it and get involved to some extent.
How is it possible to follow Vanashram without nirvana consciousness, since the essence of Vanashram is clearly like Krishna himself? How can you keep out of Krishna away from Vanashram?
The thing is that Vanashram is a system for managing society. It may have been created by Krishna. Everything's been created by Krishna. But everything, anything can be abused. Krishna consciousness can be abused, in that a person may preach Krishna consciousness but then try to exploit, you know, whatever may come as a result of his preaching. That's happened. So Vanashram is a structure, managerial system for society. And it can be abused. Yeah. It means four varnas and four ashrams. So anyone can be a sudra, vaishya, kshatriya, or brahmin and not be Krishna conscious. Anyone can be a brahmachari or grihastha or vanaprastha or sannyasi and not be Krishna conscious. So, yes, I mean, it's not that it's not possible, but the thing is that it doesn't work. And, yeah, it doesn't work, and India, the state of India now, is evidence of that fact. So many people hate the caste system. So many people have died because of the caste system, died in fighting with each other about the castes. So if anything becomes abused, Prabhupada said that money can be used to promote Krishna consciousness, or it can be used to promote killing people. A knife can be used by an expert surgeon to save someone's life. By another person, it can be used to kill someone. So it's really a matter of the consciousness. But the thing is that as far as managing society generally goes, of all the different systems that can be applied, the one which will help people facilitate their becoming Krishna conscious the most is Varnashram. It's not that if there's a communist government, people can't become Krishna conscious. They can, and they have done. It's not that if there's a right-wing government, that people can't become Krishna conscious. They can. But more people will more easily be able to become Krishna conscious if there's a Varnashram system within society. Because certain aspects of communism, certain aspects of capitalism, I mean many aspects really, but certain aspects are very strongly opposed to Krishna consciousness. Like in capitalism, the fundamental principle is exploit to get ahead. Capital, somehow get capital. That is capitalism. Yeah, and whatever achieves that is the right thing. So that mood of selfishness and greed is very much against Krishna consciousness. On the other side, communism, the idea is to reduce everyone to the same level. So that is opposed to Krishna consciousness. Then some sudra's opinion is as valuable as a qualified Brahmin's opinion. So that's very much opposed to Krishna consciousness. Capitalism is more individualistic, which is, you know, has some applicability within Krishna consciousness. Communism is more like with a single higher goal for everyone. In a sense, that's more applicable in Krishna consciousness. But anyway, so it's like that. People can become Krishna conscious, but Varnashram is the most conducive type of social environment for facilitating that. Hare Krishna.
In terms of the Vedic system, we know that the system is monarchy, because of one monarch. But actually we see that the Brahmins are the ones actually were, in one sense, running the place.
Well, they were giving instruction.
And they're democratic, you know, they put together, they, you know, they agree on something, and then they tell the king. So in one sense,
yeah,
they're the democratic people.
Well, see, there's no such thing as a pure democracy, because democracy means that the people rule, and that's highly inefficient. You know, particularly if you've got like 40 million people, as in this country, if you need to make a decision, you know, you've got to ask all 40 million people. It's very efficient, very inefficient. Anyway, I mean, that's one point. There is no such thing as democracy, actually. In fact, democracy generally means that the people are allowed every few years to decide who rules them. Other than that, they don't take part in the process of government. Anyway, the thing is that the Brahmins, when they would discuss and consider amongst themselves, they would discuss and consider on the basis of Shastra, on the basis of Vedic injunctions. And because of their acute intelligence, they would be able to analyze the situation and the relevant instructions, even though there might be different instructions, and understand which elements of which instructions were best to apply under those given circumstances. So they would come to a consensus, which in a sense is like a democratic process, but it was actually a process of enlightenment, really, in truth. Yeah. And it wasn't just, you know, your opinion, my opinion, and even though something may appear to be better than something else, but it also has major shortcomings. They would come to the point of seeing that something was right. A certain way of addressing a situation was the right way. Just like when Ashwatthama was captured after he killed the children of Draupadi. Then there was a debate what to do with him. Krishna said, kill him. Draupadi said, don't kill him. We should respect him. So then they analyzed, according to Shastra, what to do. It's just briefly presented there. I think it's the seventh chapter of the first canto. And then they came to the conclusion that he should be killed and not killed. That was the correct thing. So how do you kill him and not kill him? Because he was a Kshatriya, you kill his pride. That's even worse than killing him. If a Kshatriya was killed in an honorable way, he would think that was better than living, because his pride was maintained. His standing was maintained. That was better than being allowed to live by through being embarrassed in some way and humiliated as a coward. So to humiliate Ashwatthama was a better way of killing him than killing him. But at the same time, he shouldn't be killed because he's a Brahmin. No, you're not a Kshatriya. He's Brahma Bandhu. Yeah, fallen Brahmin. So they did both. They found this answer, and it was the right answer. You know, you could have argued for killing him or for not killing him. But in both cases, people, there would have been good reason for feeling this is not really, like, completely the right answer. It only addresses the situation in certain respects. But there are other respects which we're not addressing. But by killing him and not killing him, they completely addressed all the things that needed to be addressed. That takes expertise. And nowadays people don't have that. So therefore they come to conclusions which have benefits in certain respects, but real problems in other respects. Yeah, it's the best they can do. They're not qualified to analyze and to know what to do to cover all the different elements. Yeah.
If a Brahmin commits some sin, he should not be...
It's not meant to be killed. Brahmins, women, children, old people, even if they commit sin, they're not meant to be killed. Even if they commit sins for which different people can be killed, they can't be killed. That's the general idea, yeah. Ashwatthama killed 5 children while they were sleeping. The conclusion was he should be killed, but also not killed. So they didn't kill him. But they were so expert that they more than killed him by killing his pride. Well, what they did to kill his pride, they shaved off part of his hair and part of his beard and mustache and sent him out with no belongings to just wander, you know, with some hair sprouting out here, bit of a beard here, and so on, looking like completely weird and with nothing. And then people would see him and recognize, oh, this is Ashwatthama, but look at him, and laugh. And so because he was Kshatriya and he had that, or because he was Brahmin, actually he was Brahmin and Kshatriya, but because he was in a high position, and then to be dishonored like that, and embarrassed like that? Very heavy. Would have been more kind in a certain sense, in terms of his image, to kill him as a warrior. Arjuna captured him, he could have killed him. Normally they wouldn't capture, they would kill. Hare Krishna. Okay. So we'll end here. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Verse. Although it's not an extremely, well-known verse. But I was just thinking about learning verses generally. So I was wondering, how many verses do you know?
Much.
How many do you know? And then you forget them, or do you?
I try to.
Okay. And how many? How many do you know, Bhakti and Rita? How many do you not remember, or partly remember, or something? And how many do you know? 20. Not so many? Okay. Anyway, I just had this idea that maybe some of you today, if there's nothing much going on, I was thinking particularly the two of you probably don't have so much to do, and maybe Clara, if you... Do you know any verses? You may not have really got into that. Oh, you do? Which one? Okay. So I was thinking I could possibly give you, and whoever wants, whoever has the time, could try and learn a few verses today. What do you think? Okay? So why don't you get your pens out, and I'll just give you a few verse numbers, and then you can, if you've got access to Bhagavad Gita's, you have how many? Just one, is it?
I've got three, but one is without the...
Without the Sanskrit.
Yeah,
anyway, you could always just write down the verses so you don't have to worry about sharing the Bhagavad Gita. So why don't you get pen and paper?